Hi, this is Nicholas Kwan.
And Jacob Peck.
And you're listening to I Had No Idea. Jacob, you're finally back to me.
Yes, sir. I am back. It's good to be back. It feels so different. Not really, because I'm still in my room.
But do you know Hebrew now? That's what's important.
I know some.
Shalom.
Shalom. That's right. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Peace to you. Peace to you, my friend. How you been doing?
Yeah, I've been good. Yeah, really enjoying the summer weather that we're having. Got invited to go to a cottage, so I'm looking forward to that. And I'm trying to get sculpted. Yeah, and I think we're going camping, I think, next month, maybe?
Yeah. We got to definitely plan that out.
Yeah, sweet. I'm looking forward to that. How has your time been, like the last, what, 5-6 weeks that you've been gone?
Yeah, I mean, things have been good. I'm also super thankful for the weather. I mean, it's been a hit or miss. I started a new job as well at UPS, and so my shifts are sunrise, so I wake up at 3 a.m. and I try to get to work by 4:30 in the morning.
What do you do for UPS exactly?
I am a loader. So basically, the international packages from all over the world come to us, we take them, and we put them into trucks. And so my forearms are burning.
But that's pretty sweet. You're getting paid to work out. I miss that. I used to do that at Costco.
Oh, yeah, I remember. And you used to have these nasty tans.
Nasty tans. Yeah, the worst.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
All right, man. Let's get right into it. So my topic today, it has to do with the English language. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have a story for this, except maybe the usual, which I was just browsing Reddit. And I came across like this very interesting post, and it was simply called Hungover. And when I clicked on it, all it showed me was this picture that defined the origin of the word hangover for me. And I found it so interesting because it was actually one of the words that I've always thought about. So anyone who knows me, I'm drinking like maybe 30% of my lifetime. Yeah, probably.
30%. That's not enough.
And I've heard not enough. And I've heard many times like, hey, yeah, like you look hungover, or you know, I would feel hungover. I would tell people I'm hungover, but I never really understood the word. Like, how does that word really define how you feel the morning after you drink? You know?
Right.
It doesn't seem to have like any sort of connection. So I always wondered about it. And when I clicked this Reddit post, I was like, oh, like that's the origin. It makes a lot of sense now that I'm reading it like this. And I started to wonder like what other words are out there where we don't necessarily realize what the origin is, but it's like fascinating.
Right.
Yeah. So that's basically my topic today.
Oh, so go ahead.
Yeah, probably picking like 5 words and I'll throw in hangover at the end. It's actually a really quick definition. So 6 in total.
Awesome. Looking forward to learning some new words, adding them to my vocabulary Pokedex.
So the cool thing about all these words, though, is that they're all common words, commonly used words in the English language. So you'll learn about the words that you use every day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds good, man.
Nice. What about you?
Before I introduce my topic, I actually want to dedicate this episode to Dehan. He spoke about the Florida man in last week's episode.
Did he die?
And I want to No, I just want to dedicate this episode to him and to all the hockey lovers because he had said something about how he was really sad. And so I want to say something nice about hockey, how the best thing about hockey is the Tim Hortons. So thank you.
Really? I think the best part was the fights. Like, I used to watch a lot of hockey growing up with my dad, and I always loved it when Ty Domi would pick a fight with someone.
Oh, like, the guy with no teeth. Yeah.
Yeah, he was my favorite Leaf.
But like, truthfully, I don't love watching fights. Like, I'm not a huge UFC kind of guy. I'm about the peace, my brother, you know? Shabbat shalom, you know?
Okay, whatever, man.
But I'll watch Jackie Chan till the day I die. He's my guy.
Nice.
Okay, so let's go on to this week's topic. I have a question for you. And the question is, if you could get a tattoo of anything, where would you get it and what kind of tattoo would you get?
So I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I kind of want a sleeve on my left arm and my shoulder. And I think I would get something biblical. But
Damn.
I'm not sure what it would be though, but I would want it to be like epic imagery, maybe like depicting heaven and hell or something like that. I'm not sure.
Oh, the birth of Jesus in a manger, like on your left tricep.
Maybe, yeah.
Does it stop at your elbow or all the way down to your wrist?
I would go to my elbow.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, those. If I were to get one, I'd obviously get one of those face tattoos. Like the word huge, like a huge word that says immortal or something on my forehead.
So lame.
No, realistically, I'd probably get something small on my wrist, but I don't know. I would also probably get something biblical, but not really sure. But truthfully, I don't know if I would actually get one. It's pretty frowned upon in our culture.
Yeah.
I know my mom would actually, like, she would cut my skin off. She'd be okay with a huge scar on my arm rather than any sort of ink.
Interesting. Yeah, so I think my parents would be pretty upset about it too, but I don't think they would be so mad at me that they would hurt me. But I'm just waiting because I really want to go to like a Japanese bathhouse before I get a tattoo. And I really want to experience that before I get one. So that's my reasoning.
Right, because you're not allowed to go with ink, right?
Yeah, because culturally they associate tattoos with yakuza.
Right. Yeah, so that's basically gonna be my topic for this week. I'm not necessarily gonna be talking about like the origins of the tattoos because I feel like that's just really up for debate, but I'm gonna be researching how exactly they work. Are they really permanent? And even answer like if you get a tattoo and then gain like 500 pounds, like what happens? And so yeah,
I've
ink on the
always
skin.
wanted to know. My deepest fear is getting a tattoo and then just getting deezed, getting ripped.
Like, will it stretch? Will it get distorted? So
Yeah.
that's what I'll be answering and researching.
That's perfect. Thank you. You're answering so many questions I have about
All
tattoos.
right. I am glad. I'm happy.
Perfect. And with that, we'll go do our research and we'll be right back. Hey, okay, we're back. Hello, Jacob. Yo. So, are you gonna get a tattoo after, all was said and done with your research? Like, are you feeling better about it? Like, what's going
No,
on?
I'm leaning more towards not getting it after doing some research.
What? Come
Yeah,
on.
nothing like game changing, but I feel like I was already cautious about it before, and then now I'm reading about it, I'm like, there's some risk where I'm like, I don't know if I'd be down for
Oh
that.
no. Okay, now I don't want to hear you talk about this.
No, you do. It's really interesting, actually.
Perfect. Okay.
But yeah, how was finding out more English words and origins and where they came from?
You make it sound so lame, but it went really well. I learned a lot. I came up with, or I found maybe like five, six words, like I said, that are super interesting to me. Have really cool backstories. If this was like a TV
Backstories,
show, they
wow.
would be the most in-depth characters in the show.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're really cool.
So are these words gonna blow my mind?
Maybe. I think the like etymology would blow your mind. I'm not sure about the actual
Right.
word. Yeah.
All right, man. Why don't you start and hit me with it?
Sure. I'll just get right into it. So the first word I want to talk about today, it's a word that's been used a lot lately, just given the fact that we're in a pandemic. And the word is quarantine.
Quarantine.
Yeah. So it has a pretty interesting background. And what I find interesting about the word is that the way we use it today is actually quite different from its original meaning. And you'll find that all the words that I've selected for this show pretty much follow that same pattern.
Interesting.
So today we use it primarily as a verb that means to isolate from normal relations or communication. However, the word was originally a noun, and people today hardly use the word properly as a noun. So to be in quarantine technically refers to something way more specific than just isolating from normal relations or communication.
Right.
And you can actually find its original meaning in Merriam-Webster's dictionary today.
Okay.
So I apologize ahead of time for sounding like the beginning of a bad speech, but Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines the noun quarantine.
Amazing, amazing. If you start any essay like that, it's guaranteed A+.
Is that how you got into Queens?
Yeah, basically. That's how I wrote my PSA, or I forgot what it's called, the essay.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the entrance essay or whatever it was, yeah. So Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines the noun quarantine simply as a period of 40 days, or a term during which a ship arriving in port and suspected of carrying contagious disease is held in isolation from the shore. Yeah, so it's a pretty different definition.
Right.
And it's only like loosely related to disease. It's the fact that this boat is being like held back on shore.
Right, right.
So this word quarantine, it somehow describes this 40-day period, which is still technically the definition we use today. Mm-hmm. And it also defines the isolation of infected boats, which is pretty weird. And the cool part is that these definitions are actually quite related, way more related than we might think.
Okay.
So the word quarantine, it originated in 14th century Europe. Wow. And during this time, a little something called the Black Death plagued almost all of Europe and killed somewhere between 30 to 60% of Europe's entire population in that time.
Right.
And the disease peaked between 1347 and 1351. And kind of like how COVID-19 has changed the way we do things today, the Black Death changed the way the world did things in the 14th century.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that became common practice as a result of the Black Death was the act of isolating ships for a period of time before letting the ship's crew come back to shore.
Mm-hmm.
And how long was this time period? It was 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
And the word quarantine is actually based off of an Italian term. Italians who spoke with a Venetian dialect developed a specific word to describe this mandatory 40-day isolation of these ships. And they called it quaranta giorni.
And what? Quaranta what?
Quaranta giorni.
Giorni.
Yeah, G-I-O-R-N-I.
Like journey?
So actually, when you translate it into English, quaranta giorni, it gets translated to 40 days.
Oh.
That's it. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, okay.
Hence the word quarantine today. So it's based off of this Venetian Italian from the 14th century.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's interesting. Quarantine.
Yeah, right?
I wonder how they stayed on the boats for like 40 days. It's probably a lot of...
Yeah, I don't know what they do. I had no idea.
It's pretty nasty.
Yeah, probably something similar to like... I imagine it very similar to the Diamond Princess. Do you remember the Diamond Princess? Like back in March, it was that boat that had the coronavirus infections off the coast of the US, and they didn't let the people come back on board, like on the land.
Right. But at least those boats had washrooms though. Remember we did that toilet paper episode and like toilet paper didn't come until like the 1900s.
Oh, you're right. What were they using then?
What were
like
they
sponges
using?
Sponges with sticks on the end of it?
Oh, I think that's so what disgusting. You said. They probably ran out of vinegar, so it was probably just dry sponges.
Hopefully the salt water did something. I don't know.
Probably.
All right. So my second word. Since we're on the topic of death, I thought, what better word to tackle next than the word mortgage?
Mortgage.
Because I don't know about you, but the idea of paying off a mortgage just makes me want to die.
Right.
And you may think I'm being dramatic, but whoever made the word would actually agree with me.
Mm.
So in case you don't know what a mortgage is, I'll try to explain it. I know some kids might be listening to this episode. Who knows? So I'll just explain a mortgage real quick for everybody.
Right.
So the way I define it, because the dictionary definition is crazy and makes no sense. The way I define mortgage is that it's this fat loan that a lender agrees to give to a borrower.
Mm-hmm.
So long as that borrower agrees to make monthly payments and secures the loan with property.
Right.
And we call this property collateral. In today's context, the collateral is typically a house that's being newly purchased. And if the borrower pays back the loan, the borrower can finally claim that property fully as their own.
Mm-hmm.
But if the borrower fails to pay back the loan, well, then the lender seizes the property for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does this have to do with death? Well, basically, the legal minds in the 15th century in France, they thought that the concept of a mortgage was so risky that you'd have to be extremely desperate to take on such a big and dangerous loan. And as Canadians who've all taken French classes as young students, you may recall that the word in French for death is mort.
Mort.
And that's the first half of the word mortgage.
Oh, that's cool.
And the second half of the word is gage, which means pledge when translated into English.
So you're doing a death pledge.
Yes. So basically, the old French considered these big loans a death pledge because people who got them often spent the rest of their lives paying it off.
Right.
You also have to take into account that people didn't live as long back then, but they still got these like 30-year loans.
Well, that's actually, that makes a lot of sense. I'm on Urban Dictionary right now just to like write in these words and see what people actually think these words mean. And one of the definitions for mortgage is that weight around your neck that will never be alleviated until you die or eventually pay off by the time you are 107 years old.
That sounds like it was written by an old French person.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, people considered it a death pledge, but now it's part of our everyday life. Isn't that so great?
Yeah, yeah, people are signing their lives away.
I will probably have one in my lifetime, so I'm going to stop making fun of them.
I'm going rent all day.
That's probably the way to go. Live a free life, brother.
That's right.
So the next word I want to talk about is eavesdrop. It's an old word. It's from before the year 900. And it's invented by old English speakers. And this is really interesting to me because it's kind of like the word hangover in the sense that I don't really get what the actual word has to do with the definition because it's making a reference to the eavesdrops that an old house may have produced. Right. And if you don't know what an eave is, it's part of your home's roofing. And it specifically refers to the part of the roof that extends beyond the home's walls. And it's sloped. So can you like imagine that? So like imagine you're like your typical house, right? Like if you were to draw a house, you would draw the roof with like a triangle, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the roof actually doesn't stop where the wall stops. It keeps going for like a feet, like a foot.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And what that does is it allows the water when it rains or it snows to just drip off of the roof instead of accumulating on the roof and have it drip off so that it lands on the ground instead of dripping down the wall. Yeah. So that was called an eave. And the water dripping off of the eave, it was called an eavesdrop. And this was the original definition for eavesdrop. Today, we use the word eavesdrop to describe the act of secretly listening to a conversation.
Yeah, being nosy.
Yeah, basically. And these two definitions, they feel like they don't have anything to do with each other, right? So how do they connect? Well, apparently in the Middle Ages in England, it was common at night for people to try to listen to secret indoor conversations from underneath a building's eaves. So if you remember what I said about eaves, they stick out beyond the wall just a little bit.
Right.
And it kind of protects you from like the weather, the rain, and it's also really close to the building's walls if you're underneath the eaves. And a lot of people used to use that space to secretly listen in on conversations going on inside of the building. And a lot of spies used to do this on like royalty and nobility just to get like some secrets.
So how does it work? They hang on... They hang on the roof and listen in, or they stand like underneath?
They stand underneath. Yeah, right. Stand underneath. Yep. And the person thought to have coined the term eavesdropper, he was an English poet and playwright named George Chapman, and he used the word in 1606 as a general term to secretly listen to a private conversation. And he was obviously making a reference to the original eavesdroppers. Right. Who just listened underneath the eaves of buildings in old England. And that's why we use the word eavesdropper today to describe someone who's secretly listening in on a conversation.
Oh, that's cool.
The fourth word I want to talk about is the word addict. According to Merriam-Webster, an addict describes someone who is exhibiting a compulsive, chronic, physiological or psychological need for a habit-forming substance, right, behavior, or activity. Mm-hmm. But once again, this definition, this original definition, it's so different from how we use the word today. Mm-hmm. The word addict comes directly from the Latin word addictus, which mm-hmm. means to devote and sacrifice.
Right.
However, in Roman law, they used the word addict to describe a person who became enslaved to a master through a court ruling. Right. So if you won a slave through something you or through the court, mm-hmm. then that slave would be called an addict. So you can kind of see how like the Roman law drew from the Latin word addictus, which again meant to devote and sacrifice,
right,
even though the connection is pretty loose in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But the real reason why we use the word today, mm-hmm, the mm-hmm. way we use it, is thanks to an ancient Latin myth about a character named Addictus.
Mm-hmm.
And in this story, Addictus is a man who used to be a slave and he was set free.
Right.
But he was so used to his chains that he explored the world without ever removing them.
Whoa.
Even though he could have removed them at any time. And of course, the point of this story was to illustrate that someone can both be free and yet be enslaved by something that brings them comfort.
Whoa, that hits close to home.
That's right. I know. I feel that. I feel mm-hmm. that. And in a sense, Addictus never truly recognized his own freedom by never taking off those chains.
Right.
And kind of like addiction today, it's kind of like referring to these people who just could be so free if they just let go of this thing that brings them comfort or perceived comfort in their lives.
Right.
And that's how the definition of the word addict kind of evolved into what it is today.
Oh, that's deep. That one's deep.
Yeah, I like that one. That one gave mm-hmm. me chills.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my fifth and final word before getting to hangover, it's sandwich. I wanted to keep it light on this last one.
Sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this one's actually the most famous example out of all of the words I covered today. So you mm-hmm. may have heard this story already, but...
Yeah, but I can't. It doesn't ring any bells at the moment.
That's good. So the word sandwich, it obviously refers to that food where you basically put whatever in between two slices of bread, right?
Yeah.
And the term actually comes from the 18th century. But just the word, not the invention of the food. Like, sure, the sandwich yeah. was like a super old and ancient concept, and people ate sandwiches like way before the 18th century.
Wait, do you consider a hot dog a sandwich?
No.
Oh.
Do you?
I mean, it's a hot dog sandwich, is it not?
Yeah, but literally no one calls it that, so I don't think it qualifies.
All right.
That's just my opinion. Like, I wouldn't even call a burger, like, even though I know it's technically a sandwich.
Right.
Like, I have, like, a subtle rage against people who call it a sandwich. I'm not sure why.
I feel you.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, the word burger is right there. Might as well use the word burger and be more mm-hmm. specific. I don't know.
Yeah.
So the word sandwich, it's an English word. From, again, England in the 18th century. And it was actually named after a nobleman, specifically the 4th Earl of Sandwich. So Sandwich was a location.
Oh, okay.
And the way the story goes is that Lord Sandwich, he loved to gamble. I'm sure awesome it wasn't name. A funny name at the
That's
time.
That's an awesome name.
Lord Sandwich. Yeah. Just sounds like someone who just gives out sandwiches like all day.
Burger King.
So Lord Sandwich, he loved to gamble, and he didn't want anything to ever get in the way of his gambling, even eating. But the thing is that a lot of food, they require the use of utensils or like your full attention, basically, or getting your hands dirty. And I totally sympathize with that because, like, I don't like doing anything when my hands are dirty either. So basically, he just didn't want to take away any time from his gambling, and he wanted to even eat there. So what he started to do was he started to ask his slaves to deliver his food between two pieces of bread. And this was so that he can keep playing whatever game he was playing while keeping his hands clean.
Wow.
And he often gambled with other powerful people, so there was a political benefit of staying at the gambling table and playing with them.
Right.
And the story goes that over time, his friends wanted to order the same thing because they saw the benefit of it.
Right.
Yeah, they were like, oh, yeah, this guy's keeping his hands clean. He's also eating. It's a pretty awesome food.
Yeah.
So they started to order the same thing. But instead of describing the food, they would just go, I'll have the same thing that Sandwich is having.
Right.
And eventually, over time, this transformed into, I'll have a sandwich or I'll have the sandwich.
Ah.
Then after this, the story goes that the word itself and the food itself, it became really popular amongst English nobility. And the word just got, it caught on, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And now, even today, we use the word sandwich to describe that food that he loved so much at the gambling table.
Right. And it sounds like Lord Sandwich was also an addict. So there's some relevancy there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cool. And now, finally, my last word.
The one we've been all waiting for.
Hangover. Yeah, so thankfully this one's the easiest one to understand. It'll be the fastest to explain too.
Okay.
And the word has two definitions, but if we just stick to the definition that refers to alcohol, it actually comes from Victorian England.
Damn, England. England's just killing it.
Yeah, I mean, it is the English language. So it comes from Victorian England, and if you don't know what era that is, that's like late 19th century and early 20th century, so not too long ago. However, like all the other words I talked about today, the word hangover was not directly related to alcohol originally, and it instead referenced the cheapest form of accommodation that you can get at that time, where you can literally pay just 1 cent or 2 cents to spend the night somewhere.
Whoa.
Obviously, this bought you the bare minimum in terms of accommodations and like amenities.
Sure, yeah.
For 1 cent, you could get something called a penny sit-up. You got some food, you got shelter, and you also got a bench for you to rest on, but you weren't allowed to sleep on it.
Mm.
For 2 cents, so double the price, you you bought something known as the two-penny hangover. With this one, you were actually given a rope to sleep on, and the rope went from like one end of the room to the other end of the room, and just imagine like this huge hall, like a public space.
Right.
So the rope is really long, it goes from wall to wall, and it's about belly button height from the ground.
Right.
And basically, if you bought this two penny hangover, you were given the right to kind of just hang over it, like slouch over it on your belly and sleep there.
What? That's a terrible way to sleep.
Yeah, but like it's 2 cents. Like, what do you expect?
I'd rather just lie on the floor.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. I think some people even like got seriously ill doing this. So yeah, it was a dumb way to sleep for the night.
Interesting.
So because these accommodations, they were so cheap, they became very popular amongst men, especially, who got really drunk, spent all their money drinking the night before,
right.
And they just needed a place to crash for the night.
Right.
And because the bench that you got for 1 cent didn't allow you to sleep on it, you were actually only given the option of the rope paying 2 cents if you wanted to sleep for the night.
Right. Okay.
Hence the word hangover to describe the way we feel after a night of drinking.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's that, man.
That's awesome. Yeah, thanks for that. That was very informative. Mm-hmm.
I loved it. Yeah.
I love learning about origin stories, so you got me there. All right. So I know tattoos are becoming less taboo, especially in North America. And I would say it's pretty common, right? You don't really bat an eye anymore unless someone's just like covered in ink, right? From like the top of their scalp to their toes.
Right. And face tattoos in general.
Yeah. Face tattoos. That's right. I also know that there's tons of reasons for a tattoo, like to honor somebody, to remember someone, to remind yourself of an incident or an accomplishment, you know, artistic expression, because it looks sick and you just feel like it. But if you're anything like me, you may have no idea how tattoos actually work.
Same.
And so, yeah, don't fret. I got the answers for you.
Thanks, man.
So this is what you probably do know. The tattoo artist injects ink into someone's skin with a pen or needle, and bam, you got a tattoo.
That's it? All right.
And that's all I know, so let's dive in a little deeper. That's what she said.
What?
Artists, tattoo artists They apply the tattoo by using a needle, which looks like a pen, and it's mechanically powered by a machine, usually like a foot pedal. So if you press down, it activates. If you let go, I don't know if you ever played Time Crisis, it's kind of like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So most common pens slash machines have up to one needle, but for big power jobs, some go up to 35 needles.
Wait, how does that work though? 35?
I'm not exactly sure, but most common parlors would only have like the one needle.
Yeah, okay.
But basically this is how it works. So this needle, when it's powered, or when you push the pedal, it moves up and down at a really rapid pace. And it goes up and down 50 to 3,000 times per minute.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's vibrating. And so the needle makes contact with the skin, puncturing it about, hopefully, a millimeter deep. And then it dispenses ink into each puncture, or with each puncture. So I don't know the pain you feel when you do get a tattoo, but I reckon it pricks or stings a little bit, even though it's going like 1 or 2 millimeters deep.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's only going so deep, it's enough to go past the epidermis. So the epidermis is the visible skin you see with your eyes, and it actually punctures even the dermis. So the dermis is the second layer of skin right after the epidermis. Gotcha. Now, the difference between the skin layers, at least in regards to tattoos, is that when you scratch, cut, or wound your epidermis, it will most likely not leave any traces of a scar. So it'll receive blood from the dermis, as well as these things called fibroblasts, which are like connective tissue, and they produce collagen, which is essential for wound healing. And so the epidermis is really, really good at repairing itself. So think of the epidermis like cellular turnover as like a exfoliation. They're able to just shed and replace themselves regularly.
Okay.
If your tattoo artist doesn't penetrate the skin deep enough, your tattoos will get flushed out. Because it will just repair and then it'll cycle it out. Now the dermis, on the other hand, it's not as good as repairing itself. So the dermis doesn't go through the typical cellular turnover, and the skin actually doesn't replace itself, or at least it doesn't do it well. So when the dermis is damaged, a different process occurs where these fibroblasts will produce massive amounts of scar collagen, and that's how we get scars. This collagen is then used to heal the wound, which is why your scar is often discolored or it has like a lack of sensation, and it's like a little bumpy, and it protrudes from the rest of your skin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it bears this question, does that mean we are scarring our body with little holes every time we get a tattoo? Well, the answer is yes and no. A lot of people think that your tattoos remain on your skin because the ink goes deep and then it gets like trapped in your skin.
Like between the epidermis and dermis?
Yeah, that's okay. What a lot of people tend to think. Like Your skin saturates the ink and then your epidermis kind of heals over it, containing the ink. That's not what actually happens. When you puncture your dermis with a needle and ink is spewed out, your immune system realizes something is happening. And so your immune system goes, oh, what? We need some cells to be sent to the site and fix this problem. And so all these white blood cells come rushing in, called microphages.
This reminds me of Osmosis Jones.
Oh, wait, Osmosis Jones? I don't know that.
Yeah, do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, it was like that movie. I think it was a TV show as well. Yeah, it's a cartoon. It's about the white blood cell that's like a cop in the body.
No, I've never heard of this. That sounds That sounds awesome, though.
All right.
Yeah, so these white blood cells called microphages, which their name actually means big eater in Greek.
Okay.
They come to the rescue, and they come to gobble up the foreign stuff in your body, i.e. the ink in this scenario, right? Now, these microphages have acid in them to usually destroy the invaders in your body. However, against the ink pigments, it doesn't have that effect.
Hmm.
And so the microphages, they devour the ink, but they're unable to neutralize it. And so they just kind of contain it.
Okay.
And then they sit there like a Tupperware container with all this ink.
Okay.
And they have nowhere to go.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's why tattoos, the ink just stays. It doesn't go anywhere.
Oh, cool.
Because your body is constantly fighting it. And so you can ask the question like, okay, well, can't you just wait until the cell dies? Because obviously cells don't live forever. But research shows that even when the cell dies, there's other microphages just waiting around to gobble it up. And so they come in, they quickly gobble it up, and then the same cycle happens. And so that's why tattoos don't really fade away either.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, basically tattoos stay in your skin because your immune system thinks your body is under attack and is constantly in war with the ink, trying to neutralize it, but only having the capabilities to really contain it.
That sounds so tiring for your body.
Yeah. And so that's basically how tattoos work. Reading up on tattoos has definitely made me more cautious, like I mentioned before, because I'm scared of this thing called the blowout effect, and there isn't really much you can do. Do you know what the blowout effect is?
No idea.
Okay, so the blowout effect is when your tattoo artist, contrary to the one where he or she doesn't penetrate the skin deep enough, sticks the needle too deep, and then the ink goes beyond the dermis and into your fat.
Mm.
And then, I don't know if you ever, you know, but it's actually pretty common. They're like often on the lines of your tattoo or whatever, there'll be like a smudge or fog in or like around the tattoo.
Okay.
And it's because the ink just like spread and it's below the dermis and you can't really reach it. And the thing that I'm scared about is that this incident can happen to anyone. Even if you're an experienced tattoo artist, because even if your tattoo artist is like really sick and skilled, your skin, it differs from people, person to person. It's unpredictable.
And they don't fix it? Like there's no way to kind of reverse that?
No,
or?
There's no way to fix it.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, yeah. So if your skin, like for whatever reason, is thinner than expected and he accidentally sticks the needle and it just goes through your dermis, it'll blow out. And so obviously solutions to things like this is like a laser removal, but those are like really expensive.
Yeah.
Most people often can't afford that.
That's kind of bad news for me because I'm so ticklish. I feel like if I were getting a tattoo, I would just move and then like they would just puncture
right,
my fat.
You gotta stay still.
Ah.
Right.
Maybe yeah. I won't get one.
You could go the cheaper route and just, this is what most people do, they just get a bigger tattoo on top.
I don't know.
Which I don't love, but people will block it out. And if you block it out, at least it won't look blown out.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like a real solution to me because you obviously wanted that smaller tattoo and now you're putting something else on top of it that you didn't necessarily want. I mean, I guess if you're happy with it at the end of the day, it's fine, but like not ideal.
Yeah, so for me, like when I was reading about this, I was like, oh, I don't know if the risks are really worth it. Like, I mean, even if I get a small tattoo, but even then, I just don't want stuff that, I don't want my, it just feels weird knowing that my body's like constantly fighting.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I feel that. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, that's basically it. That's how tattoos work. I mean, I don't know if that was interesting or less than interesting, but I was surprised that, I was actually genuinely shocked at like how tattoos worked. And so for me, this was really fun to do.
Yeah, I really, truly had no idea that our body, like basically our immune system is really the one keeping that tattoo for us.
Right.
But weren't you going to talk about like if we gain weight, like what happens to the tattoo?
Yeah, so basically because it's your skin that's being affected, there won't be that much difference unless you have drastic weight changes. But even if you gain like tons of muscle, it won't distort your tattoo. What's important is keeping your skin hydrated so that your tattoo and your skin like doesn't crack. But if you happen to be like 500 pounds and then drop weight in a short amount of time, like a lot, a substantial amount, and you get stretch marks, that'll also ruin your chances. Or not your chances, but it'll ruin your tattoo in general.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if it's like minor changes, like 50 to 100 pounds, and I feel like that's drastic, but even within that range, it shouldn't be that much of a problem. Maybe 100, but like 50 pounds, you should be okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet, man.
Yeah, so that was my topic. Hope you learned something. I learned something. Thank you for the words. I appreciate that.
Thank you for the words. All those English words originating in England, how dare they?
Honestly. Okay.
All right. Want to close this out? You remember how to do that, or should I?
Yeah, let me see if I got this memorized. If you enjoyed our episode or liked what you heard, drop a comment, drop a like, drop a follow, whatever it is that you can do to support the channel. We appreciate you. You can go on Instagram and follow us on ihadnoidea.podcast, or you can hit us up on email at ihadnoidea.podcast@gmail.com. And yeah, if you didn't know, or wait, no, that's not how it goes. Oh, I was so close. I was doing so good. This is how it goes. This is how you end it. If you had no idea,
now you do. I miss you, Jacob. Hey. Welcome back. Love you, bro.
Thank you. I miss you too. I'll talk to you soon, all right? Miss you, bro.
See you, everybody.